fit, active, healthy, happy, enjoying the prime of your life. Looking out for your health and wellness, this is Health Talk with Fred Lowry from Lowry Drug in Statesville. Call now to ask Fred your health questions, 704-873-1400, 704-873-1400. You can also visit Fred at his store, conveniently located on Hartness Road in Statesville.
Good afternoon, this is Fred Lowry, pharmacist and doctor of natural medicine, and this is Health Talk. This is pre-recorded for August, not August, I'm jumping ahead, March. Where did that come from? March the 8th on Friday, so we won't be able to take any calls. This program is intended to share knowledge and information based on my research and experience. It's not intended to offer individual advice, nor does it replace a one-on-one relationship with a qualified healthcare provider. Your daily choices have more to do with your health than anyone in the healthcare field. My hope is that this show will empower you with knowledge to take a proactive approach to your health. So we've got a lot of things to talk about. I'm going to start out with something that I don't know that we can do anything about. But you're aware of the gain-of-function research that happened with China and the Wuhan lab related to COVID some time ago. We're continuing to do this. The U.S. government is again funding gain of research with Chinese scientists to make viruses more potent in birds this time. The U.S. Department of Agriculture gave $1 million to fund research on bird flu at the Chinese Academy of Sciences in Beijing, China. So bird flu is generally confined, obviously, to birds, and it is a big concern among agriculture in that, flocks of birds in highly concentrated areas, if they have a flu, then it kills the flock, and the way they've taken care of that is primarily to just kill the whole flock. So if they determine a bird has bird flu in a let's just say a chicken house or whatever, then they just dispose of all of them. And this apparently is the preferred way to deal with this. Many of the veterinarians in poultry science are really not in favor of trying to vaccinate an entire group of birds. They just prefer the current method. And one of the specified reasons for that is that vaccinated birds could shed the virus to unprotected birds, for one thing. And versus the isolation approach. So there we have the concept of shedding again. The other thing is that a vaccinated bird may be able to carry the virus without showing symptoms. So that would be another problem. So we continue this clandestine activity of trying to make viruses more potent, and then also trying to see how they would jump from animals to human beings. Doesn't make any sense to me, except under the guise of some kind of biological warfare. But we can't do anything about that. Another thing in the news, and coming up, I always try to, if I tell you about something, I try to give you information on how to deal with that. A very interesting thing in the news is this was reported February the 15th of this year. The journal Exposure Science and Environmental Epidemiology reveals that a very large number of Americans are testing positive for a chemical called chloramiquat. It's an agricultural chemical used as a pesticide and a plant growth regulator. When they tested foods, the chemical was detected in 92%, or reported to be detected in 92% of oat-based foods examined, including Quaker Oats and Cheerios. So some of the heart healthy promotions are positive on oat products, but and it's a very nutritional product, but the problem is all the chemicals that are in these products. So this chemical is linked to reproductive and developmental problems in animals. So it was primarily used in, or let's just say, currently used only for ornamental type plants. However, the Environmental Protection Agency has proposed to expand this use to barley, oats, triticale, and wheat. Triticale is a hybrid crossbreeding between wheat and rye. So the way this substance works, it blocks hormones that stimulates growth prior to bloom. And so one of the reasons to use that would be in wheat products or oats, because it keeps the stem short. And as the stem grows, if it grows too much, and the grain head gets on, then it falls over, and it makes it more difficult to harvest. So of this chemical, animal studies primarily done on pigs shows reproductive declines when pigs are fed with this chemical-treated grains. It disrupts their estrous cycle, decreases fertilization capacity of sperm, reduces sperm motility, decreases testosterone, dysregulates fetal growth of head and bones. So that's certainly not good, and dysregulates metabolism. So it does affect the hormone system. It does this by altering how hormones are made. And it gets into a cellular level as well. So in 2018, if the product is only approved for ornamentals, how's it getting into the country? 2018, they started allowing grains from other countries that use this product. Samples, the urine samples, were for tested for this product. In 2017, were about 69% of the population. 2023, it's about 90% of the population. So a large number of people that are eating these products have one more chemical in their body that is not good. Interestingly, they tested 25 conventional and 8 organic oat-based samples, 9 in non-conventional wheat-based samples purchased in the grocery stores. All but 2 of the 25 non-organic-based products had detectable levels of chloramquat in them. One organic oat product contained a low amount, as did 2 wheat-based products. So, you know, there you have an organic product that has some kind of chemical contamination. We don't really know how that happens, other than probably they're just using conventional grain or mixing it and calling it organic. So these type of grains also contain linoleic acid, which is the omega-6, is not good for you. So we're coming up on a break here. Stay tuned for more information about a product that I really love called Zeolite, a great detox product. We'll be back. Welcome back to Health Talk. This is Fred Lowry, pharmacist and doctor of natural medicine. Lowry Drug on Harkness Road in Statesville was established in 1959. We are a traditional family pharmacy with a state-of-the-art compounding laboratory. We offer a full line of medical equipment, supplies, including CPAP, oxygen, scooters, everything you need to take care of someone at home. We have a full line of supplements, nutritionals, herbals, essential oils, and homeopathics, and more. Come see us. So, Joe, you had a question.
So regarding what you were talking about on the other side of the break with organic foods and things, once they get contaminated like that, is there any... Do they have to say it's no longer organic, or can they still market it as an organic product?
Well, there are organizations that offer inspections for farms that want to be organic. And so they do a survey there, and they come by, and they'll say they are organic or they're not. Of course... I've been to a number of these organic farms, and as far as I know, they're very careful. There are things that can be used on these plants to deter insects and other things. And most of the weed control is done using blockades, and the insect control. Sometimes they actually just hand remove them and or use something like pyrethrins, which is synthetically made, but it's a chemical made repellent made from a plant. There are other things out there that are like that. But so once you get to the harvesting and it goes to the processor, what happens after that? We know that human beings are not always completely. Upstanding in terms of their choices that they make. So, and it could be too that maybe when they're processing one grain and then they come in and they get organic, which I think would be a very bad practice. They may be running it through the same processor, but it happens. It does make me wonder sometimes in terms of organics, because. Another aspect would be there are organics grown in other countries, and you have no idea what's happening with that. So, we talk about these chemicals. We've talked about this before, but there are other chemicals that are sprayed on grains. There's fungicides. They spray glycophosphates Roundup on as a quote-unquote drying agent to speed up the ability to harvest a product, and that would be like wheat and oats and potatoes. So, this is why, we have all these chemicals that we're exposed to, and you really have to spend more time looking at how you're going to mediate those things. And we talked about water. So these chemicals, when they're being sprayed, they're getting in the waterways, and so that's why I recommend using the Santavia water filter or some other water filter that can remove chlorine and fluoride. Berkey's are great. Brita, I think, has activated charcoal, which removes much of that, but you do have to remember you should have a schedule for changing the filters, particularly depending on how often you're using those things. So decreasing the amount of contamination is really important, and it's getting tougher and tougher to do that. So that brings me to zeolite. Zeolite is a volcanic type product. It's an earth product, and it has a negative charge to it. It has kind of a chalky consistency to it. And it traps or cages positively charged toxins, which may include heavy metals, lead, mercury, aluminum, petroleum products. It can trap molds. We use this as a mediation for the previous intervention to our virus a few years ago in terms of removing things that were contaminating people, you know, from getting that medical intervention. So, you know, in theory, you could use it for graphene or lead, any kind of heavy metal type or positively charged chemical. So this, and interestingly enough, the directions, and I just ran across this recently, my mistake, but the directions are basically one scoop in liquid daily, which is 1 gram. I understand that was perhaps related to regulatory type issues, but you really need a much larger dose than that to do a detox. And so this thing becomes a passive way of detoxing things that come in your body. It's designed so that the particle size of this zeolite is reported to be from 0 to 40 microns. Anything under 10 microns is really small. It can get in the bloodstream and clean that up. Anything over that stays in the gut to help mop up toxins there. So the chemicals, let's just say like mercury, if their mercury happens to be floating around in there, but which, by the way, for the most part, these chemicals, if you're having an active exposure, that's stuff that's happening in the bloodstream. A lot of these chemicals get stored into the body because it maybe can't deal with it or doesn't have the energy to detox those chemicals. So as an example, this chemical, the chloramquat, apparently has a really short half-life, which means how many hours does it take for half of this drug to get out of the system. Now, we'll tell you that just because something has a short half-life, doesn't mean that it's gone, you know, because it can be stored in body tissue and fat tissue, other places. So just because you don't see it in the urine does not mean that it's not there. So here we have these chemicals that supposedly with a short half-life, but they're saying that this chloramquat basically is eliminated from the body. They don't really know that chemical is not being stored somewhere. The half-life may be because the body's taking it up, you know, just because it doesn't show up in the urine. So, you got a question?
I do, actually. Okay. I hear about half-life a lot when talking about chemicals. Why is it so important to know the half-life of a chemical? Why specifically that?
Well, that came from drug therapies because it determines how often you should dose someone. You know, so if it has a long half-life, and some drugs had the problem of having too long a half-life, and not just the drug, but the metabolites of the drug. So Demerol is an example. It used to be used quite widely, but you could get toxicity from it, not just from the drug Demerol or Meperidine, but as it metabolizes, those metabolites became more toxic. So when you're dosing something 3 or 4 times a day, you just keep adding on to that toxicity. And interestingly enough, even chemicals, that you are sprayed on products or agricultural type products, the half-life of those chemicals makes a difference, you know, as to how long it's going to stay in the soil. And the other thing that makes a difference is the soil pH. So the environment of the soil, not dirt. There's a difference between dirt and soil. Soil is a very bioactive ecosystem that is very complex. It's completely unappreciated. But the pH of that soil and the organisms that are in there determine how quickly a chemical could be broken down. So just because you have a half-life of, let's just say, 20 days for a chemical, doesn't mean that that is the half-life, because it has to do with where you're putting it. And I would venture to say that's the same principle in the human body, is that the half-life of a substance consumed would probably be different from person to person. It may be dramatically different. So perhaps a healthier person could clear a toxin quicker. So the zeolite, say it picks up some mercury, then it comes across some lead, and it may have it attracted to the lead more, so it dumps out the mercury and it picks up the lead. This is why you need a higher dose of it, because if it's exchanging toxins, you want to make sure you've got enough of the material to pick up the other toxins. More on this when we come back. We're coming up on a break here. This is Fred Lowry, and this is Health Talk. Stay with us. Welcome back. This is Fred Lowry, and this is Health Talk. We were just talking about zeolite and half-lives and such things. So when we're looking at detoxing, it seems like I would like to find ways to detox that don't cause problems. For some individuals, the concept of getting rid of toxins sometimes is you go low and slow, which means you don't want to create too much of a problem when you detoxify. So some people can detoxify just by drinking more water. And there are people that if that happens too fast, their body becomes overwhelmed and they get some type of detoxification reaction. They don't feel well. I've seen people that by increasing probiotics, sometimes got detox type reactions, increase bowel frequency, et cetera. Or maybe when they're killing off yeast or displacing yeast, the byproducts of that yeast is impacting the individual and making it difficult for them to function. So, all of these things happen. Well, with the zeolite, if you take a low dose and you have some type of negative reaction, the answer is to take more. In most cases, we would back off and start back slowly again. But what's happening is this zeolite is picking up and or one chemical displacing it, going back and forth. If you don't have enough material on board, then that's where these other toxins now become free in the bloodstream again. Something you definitely don't want with heavy metals and mercury. The other thing is that many toxins can cluster together in the body and sometimes in biofilms. Now, biofilms are just think of them as slimy coating type things that hold different types of maybe microorganisms. If you were to open up some water pipes, let's just say PVC, there'd probably be a little bit of a slick, slimy feel on the inside of that pipe. That's a biofilm. And so a lot of times bacteria get inside of these biofilms, and sometimes antibiotics can't reach them. Some organisms that are notorious for actually creating more biofilms by what they excrete. But this you know, other toxins can be in these biofilms. And the zeolite has the capacity to disrupt these. Perhaps the mechanism would be as it electrically draws out, the positively charged toxin is disrupting the biofilm, which leads to the release of other substances. So that's, and that would be another explanation as to why it would be important to take more of the zeolite, to have enough substance on board to be able to capture. So the recommended dose now is about 15 grams, which is about a tablespoonful. And you can put this I put it in my the smoothie that I made this morning. You can take it separately in water. It doesn't really dissolve in water. It has a little bit of a chalky taste to it, but it's not bad at all, really. I will say you'll see liquid zeolite type products out there that are supposed to be nano type or whatever. Based on the way the mechanism works, I don't think that's an effective way to do this. You need more of the substance to use to detoxify. So some people take that for some time, even up to 3 months. I don't necessarily think it's necessary to do that, but when you're looking at symptom resolution, which is we've used the zeolite and with people that had issues and even things like anxiety, let's just say you have anxiety and you've got heavy metals and things like graphene in your body, electromagnetic fields can be received, by those things. We've talked about that through cell phones and. So when you have these accumulations of electrically charged products or toxins in the body, particularly metals, then you're disrupting the electrical systems of the body. And of course, when you do that, that could lead to anxiety. So the symptom resolution, we don't know because we're not measuring output of toxins and what we're capturing. We don't know exactly what's coming out per se, although people have done that. So we get symptom resolution, and we don't necessarily know what toxic load improves that, because or decreasing what the toxic load. So obviously, when you decrease some toxic load in the body, things get better, and so you're creating an environment for the body to heal. The other thing is that happens, I think, in the body is that when you decrease toxic load, the body redistributes toxins throughout the body and tissue, some more easily than others. So petroleum-type toxins can be captured in fat tissue. Let's just use an example. If you could detoxify your hand, whatever chemicals, let's just say there's something in there, after that, toxins may redistribute back into your hand, but now they're at a lower level, we would hope. So, I think the zeolite could be helpful. We had used it with some homeopathics like graffitis in the past. So there's other things you can do, but I think it's just a real nice way to detox because it's somewhat passive. It's kind of like activated charcoal. It binds up toxins and then is eliminated. There are things like that that are certainly helpful. Activated charcoal kind of blows my mind. Another mind blower here.
That one makes me scared at times. I see people, they use toothpaste that's activated charcoal. It doesn't seem healthy to me.
Well, there's nothing to be afraid of with activated charcoal. it does have a, it's kind of cavernous. I mean, the surface area of activated charcoal is mind-blowing. You know, so, I mean, it's been estimated that like 5 grams, like a teaspoon, has the surface area of all, of almost a 3,000-square-foot house. It's kind of like the computer chip blows my mind, too, you know, right. How much can be stored in there. But activated charcoal is really great for indigestion. If you get food poisoning, a dose of that is good for gas. You know, how it contains, absorbs gas in the body. That's one of the things, the products that I would say you definitely need to keep around the household because you don't know.
Is it like a pill that you can take of activated charcoal?
You can take it in a capsule. You'll find it in just about any drugstore in the antacid or digestion type area. We also have it in a powder, so you can put it in water. It can be messy. You don't want to spill it because it will go everywhere. It's so fine. But you can put it in water just like the zeolite and drink it. It doesn't really have a taste. It can be a little bit gritty. It's another one of those home remedies to keep on hand, along with things like baking soda and peroxide and all those things. We're coming up on a break here. We're going to come back and talk about what lives in your gut. This is Fred Lowry, and this is Health Talk. Stay tuned. Segment 4 of Health Talk. We've been talking about all kinds of things, but the last topic is what lives in your gut. The bacterial content and microbes that is on your skin and mouth and in your intestines is pretty incredible. It's an entire ecosystem of things that this kind of blows your mind too. So if you're, or blows my mind, the complexity of it. So microorganisms are basically everywhere, and it impacts so many things. It can impact your brain, your digestion of your food, your mood, your immune system. Your gut is the home to bacteria and viruses and fungus, it starts in your mouth. So when you use mouthwashes that are antibacterial, they have alcohol in them. You know, the classic was Listerine. You know, nobody wants to have bad breath, but. Which, by the way, if you do, is probably microorganisms that are not the ones that you want there. So as you chew your food, that's when your digestion process starts. The bacteria in your mouth actually play a role in your blood pressure because that's the beginning of making nitric oxide. So if you're, in theory, if you're using antiseptic-type mouthwashes, it can impact your blood pressure, can go up, and it's been demonstrated to do that. Your oral microbiome plays a role in all kinds of things, to tooth decay, gingivitis, and bad breath, provided you have the bacteria that you don't want there. So there are bacterias there that also help produce short-chain fatty acids, so it's breaking down some of the fats. It helps with inflammatory response. It's quite the thing, really. In your esophagus, there's bacteria that starts to break down sugars and the carbohydrates that you eat. So now we're talking about glucose metabolism and insulin resistance. Certainly the use of artificial sweeteners is a negative for that. In the stomach, you would think there's not that much bacteria there, and you would be correct. There may be none, but in that acid environment. But bacteria migrate to environments that they like, and so some bacteria find different environments important to them. In the science of microbiology, most schools teach the concept of monomorphic bacteria. In other words, a staphylococcus or a strep is always going to be that. There are other schools of thought divergent from that believe in pleomorphism. Now, pleomorphism means that bacteria, if the environment changes it's in, it will morph to something else. And that's been demonstrated. So when you create an environment that a bacteria doesn't like, it has to change to become something else. Excuse me, I'm going to have to take a sip of water here. So you've heard of lactobacillus, I think, or many of you have. It's been called a psychobiotic because it has an effect on mental health, particularly anxiety and depression. So that's a little bit mind-blowing that could happen. I think some of these bacteria excrete substances that certainly impact the body. So let's just say if you take an antibiotic and you have a bacterial kill-off, and then maybe you get diarrhea, well, that's because of the kill-off. That would be a negative effect of bacteria. And, of course, anytime you take an antibiotic, you're disrupting that normal bacteria in the gut. So as you go further and further down the gut, the bacterial contents increase. You go into the small intestines, you're breaking down carbohydrates there. The bacteria help do that. They produce vitamins like B12 and vitamin K2. The bacteria helps protect against other pathogens. So here we are breaking down food, carbohydrates, and producing vitamins that really affect your immune system. And so when you do things that disrupt that, in particular, antibiotics, we know about that, and you can get that from, by prescription, but then you can also get it through your food. And then the chlorine in the water, if you're drinking chlorinated water, you are definitely disrupting your gut flora because that's how they sanitize water. So that would be a problem. A simple way of dealing with that, too, by the way, if you don't have a water filter, is you can just boil the water and the chlorine will vaporize or just leave it sitting out. And most people are not going to go to that extent to deal with that. So when you have this imbalance of the bacteria, you can actually change the body composition. So people that are overweight have gut bacteria that are not conducive to dealing with these carbs, which I find pretty fascinating. So we talk about the complexity of the body, and it's really amazing in terms of the creation and how things work together. It's very complex and sometimes chaotic. So one of the principles that naturopaths would try to do is you change the environment. You can't really intervene with a drug, a drug becomes in some ways kind of like a Band-Aid. So the way you change the health of someone is to change the environment. You improve the water quality. You improve the food quality, your ability to digest. You may add probiotics to improve the gut health. And what happens as you do that and removing toxins is that the body finds an environment that is conducive to healing. If we go back to the toxins like that are that we're trying to collect, maybe using zeolite or other things, you know, sometimes the body just doesn't want to release toxins. I mean, if you're in a chronically bad health situation, you may not have the energy to process toxins. You may not have the vitamins available to process toxins. So as a self-protection mechanism, the body just hangs on to that stuff until you can. So, you know, as we improve things, I mean, as we talked about, then you're creating an environment that the body's able to detoxify. And that's the healing part, because the body can heal itself if you can provide the nutrients and get the roadblocks out of the way. So the other part that's very interesting is your gut and your brain communicate in many ways. And Joe, they've even shown that bacteria can communicate with electrical fields, which is another mind-blowing kind of thing.
How?
Well, I think how, because every organism is made up of atoms and molecules that have an electrical charge. I really think that's kind of the way drugs work in many ways. You know, we have this drug receptor theory that, you know, a drug goes into this lock and key. Well, that doesn't really always make sense, because, you know, the drugs have different shapes chemically. So I think a lot of times they're just working based on the electrical field of that drug and having the influence on the particular cell that's there or whatever. So, you know, you have bacteria or the lack thereof that's linked to things like Alzheimer's disease. There's all kinds of things. So going back, I kind of lost my train of thought there. You know, this communication between the brain and the gut. You know, people get gut feelings. You know, the gut can actually operate independently from the brain. It's just a really very interesting concept. Now, one of the products that we've had the most success with is a probiotic, is made by Natural Creations. It's called Enterobiotic SBO. So it has 14 strains of the good bacteria, and SBO is soil-based organisms. So if you're eating garden food, you got bacteria on that, and that garden food is actually aids in the digestion, the bacteria that's there. So some of the things, obviously, the foods that we've talked, C-section births, those children get their normal bacteria from vaginal birth. So that could be an issue with that. And we're running out of time, so it gives you an idea of where you might be helpful in using probiotics. This is Fred Lowry, and this was Health Talk. Stay tuned for our next Friday's episode.